This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 383, brought to you by Appleseed Comic Con and iFanboy listeners like you.
Ain't no sense in fight or arguing dogma. Been working all week long, and now we got a couple days off. Your college boy, you got too much time on your hands. Sitting around thinking about revolution. Got fire in your bridges and a 10-ton brain. Fire in your bridges and a 10-ton brain. Too much thinking, drop fell insane. You got fire in your bridges and a 10-ton brain.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 383. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul the Christian Gentleman Montgomery.
Present.
And Josh the Big Train Flanagan.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
Very well, thank you for asking, sir.
We are fanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics. This was a big, pretty big week for comics. So there was a bunch this week. One of us picks the best one. They write about it on the website. We talk about it on the podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, your questions, your comments, your concerns, all that stuff, all that fun stuff. And before we get to all of that, though, quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show, and there'll be spoilers abound. So if you don't want to know that Ultimate Spider-Man's mother died and nobody cared, don't listen. Pause the show and come back. Until we get to that point, that horn means Josh is the pick of the week.
Go. I don't think anybody – I'm just realizing this. Every time you're about to tell me to start talking about this, I realize I have no idea what I'm about to say. Like, I haven't thought about it. I haven't planned. Thank God I write
that. That's what 7 years of professionalism gets you.
Yeah.
It's less preparation.
iFanboy, good at winging it. Good at winging it, the iFanboy story.
Winging it since 2000. All right.
Let me okay. not say good.
Adequate.
At winging it. Adequately winging it.
Adequately winging it. That's our new slogan. Go.
The pick of the week is Uncanny Avengers, which still doesn't sound right when I say it. Number 7 by Rick Remender and Daniel Acuna. And I just liked this a lot. There was actually several books that could have been the pick of the week this week, but at the end of the day, you know, when we go back to when we were talking about the first issue, and I remember the complaint of it being that, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know. And I just, it brought me back instantly, and I mentioned this in my review a little bit, but it brought me back instantly to, I hate to say this, but when I was a kid and I had this big stack of Avengers comics in this ripped paper bag that someone brought home for me. They're like, oh, we knew this guy had comics, thought you'd like them. And they were all Avengers comics, you know, steep in the Wanda Vision sort of...
The best era.
Yeah, drama years. And it was really melodramatic, and I didn't know what was happening with any of them when I started, but I liked it a lot. And this reminds me of
that. The Roger Stern era or before that?
Which I wouldn't even I couldn't even tell you who it was. Who
was that
them.
The Black Knight era or before the Black Knight?
I want to say before.
Okay, a little bit before Roger.
He may have shown up a little bit. I didn't know most of the characters at the time, you know, but I was reading this and there were a couple of very specific moments that just flashed me back to that. And I was like, wow, I haven't read an Avengers comic like this in a long time. And I do think of this as an Avengers comic. I know that
it is.
A mix.
Oh, totally. It's an Avengers comic.
Okay, well, they're all Avengers comics now, by the way.
We are all Avengers.
They all came out this week. They're all Avengers. But this is right now for me, this is functioning as my Avengers book. And, you know, I'd had enough of the way that the Avengers books were under Bendis, and I'm not loving the ones that Hickman's doing. I know they'll be good in 12 months.
I actually
pulled
the ripcord in those books this week.
Yeah, like they might be good in 12 months, and I can go back and read them then, but right now it is not holding my interest at all, so I stopped.
Yep.
But there were just a couple of moments in here that were touchstones for me in you know, what I like out of one of these comics. Right away, first visual cue, page 2, was Acuna drawing that Celestial coming out of space, and I was just like, all right. It was just like that image just made me super happy. And then as you get through, basically the rest of the issue was the Avengers just talking to each other in the mansion under a lot of pressure from outside. And, you know,
I was just thinking, you know, there's often a complaint about modern comics is that like the Avengers sit around the coffee table talking. But I'm thinking about it now as you talk about the old comics. I mean, that's a lot of what those old stories were too.
Sure.
Was them sitting around. The Avengers was as much about fighting Kang as they were about Wanda and Vision and Simon's love triangle and you know, people fighting in the mansion. I mean,
was the X-Men, you know, that's not unusual. So, you know, we get into the mansion and Alex is trying to figure out what he's got going. I really like him, the way that Remender's. I know he said the most horrible thing on Earth, which may or may not be. I don't know. Who cares? That's going to get me in trouble.
May or may not be what, Josh?
It may or may not be an allegory to real life or not. It's, you know, who cares?
Okay.
I don't. And then you cut to sort of moping, tight red turtleneck Simon, mm-hmm. you know, in his bedroom. And then Wanda comes in. It looks like it's straight out of a different era. It looks like a dramatization of old soap operas. And there's just this.
What was his line? That was my favorite moment of the week. Is like, I came back from the dead because I loved you so much, or something like that.
I love you so much. I came back from the dead. For you.
Yeah.
And they look like they're about to kiss, and then
and she's like, "That's a lot of pressure."
Yeah,
I'm
like a brother, she says, and I was like, "Oh, that's gonna hurt."
It's like very Dark Shadows. Like
I love that Wonder Man has a mannequin that he keeps his suit on, and it's like appropriately sized, so it fits perfectly. It's like somebody took a molding cast of his body to create the mannequin.
That doesn't.
Do you get that when you become an Avenger? Do you get your own mannequin that fits
doesn't
your
seem
body
convenient
perfectly?
In terms of getting it off of there?
No,
because see, the body can turn and shape and move. That seems to be solid. So
there's like, if there's an emergency, he's got to get the leg off the legs. He's got to break it in half.
Yeah.
He's an actor, right? Is that
yes.
isn't that so? Maybe he had like a body cast made for one of his films.
Well, anybody who loves their body has a body cast made. I'm right, Connor, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have one right. I got a new one actually.
Yeah.
Been working out, so I had to get a new cast made. And
I can't even look at the old one. And then you cut to, you know, Alex and Jan, you know, looking through. They're going to sell clothing, which is
the
clothing.
Avengers line.
Yeah.
Hipster Avenger clothing.
Progressive, I mean, hipster clothing. Propaganda. And, you know, she makes an argument to the other side. This is one of those things that I think Remender is actually really good at, is that I know that the guy, the author himself, Rick Remender, has very specific views on things in society. I know this because I've known him for a long time and I've seen him on social internet. But here what he's doing is he in this book all along, he's presented different sides of things that make sense for different characters to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the reasons why the other thing was sort of blown out of proportion, because it's characters talking, not him.
Let's leave that thing behind.
Sorry, so, I can't. It's hard to get over because it's the thing that sort of is weighing in the background. Listen, I am the one who picks Marvel books that people got really angry at.
I think the most important thing is that even though we've enjoyed this series all the way through, I think this is the arc that's really proving the promise of this book.
Well, yeah. I gotta say that I've been talking about the story a lot, but I am head over heels with Acuna right now.
Acuna was one of the big reasons why. I think if anything that I didn't like about the first arc, it was Cassidy's art after the first issue.
Yeah.
It really hurt it. And it also hurt the schedule. This book's only been issue 7, and this came out back in New York Comic Con, mm-hmm. Which was back in October. So, between the art and the writing and the classic Avengers feel, this is one of my favorite books right now.
Also, this book also has my absolute favorite reaction of the week in one panel, one face.
Thor?
Yep. Yeah. With the little motion things around his eyes when he sees his axe.
Bjorn.
Yeah. Oh, that's just great. And, the whole thing just looks good. He goes from that sort of melodrama of the personal people standing around grimacing at each other to those big spacescapes and the sword compound, which looks amazing, to, you know, that wonderful last page, in Rio de Janeiro. And it's the whole thing was just all sorts of things that I like about superhero comics that I guess I haven't seen in a while, or that they were just hitting in exactly the right way. It was a really fun Avengers book, basically.
I think the keywords are it's well-rounded. Just the way Remender, as his narrative voice, as you said, is really well-rounded and writes from different viewpoints. The book, too, is just there's a great diversity of tones and subject matter, and you're covering all corners of the Marvel Universe, and that's sort of the point of this, because this is the Uncanny Avengers. It's the blending of the X-Men stuff and the Avengers stuff, and there's even more than that.
It's a pretty packed issue, too.
You've got the death of a Celestial, which is enough on its own, but then you also have, you know, the interpersonal stuff that you mentioned, and for multiple sets of characters. A lot of heavy stuff for Rogue. She has just killed someone, and now she's being asked to keep tabs on someone that she was very close to in Magneto.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. It's a soap opera, but then it's also a space opera too.
It's a ton of bang for your buck for a sort of a middle of the run issue too. I think we're gonna have a question later about first issues or versus last issues or whatever. And this is just sort of in the middle of the run.
Right.
You know, big stuff happens in it, but you know, you don't feel shortchanged at all. You look at Cap's helmet, but that's regardless.
It's a great. This is one of the books I look forward to the most now when it comes out. I get very excited when I see it's coming out, and I love Acuna's character models. They're all different. He doesn't have like man face and woman face. They've all got you can look at a crowd of people without their costumes on and pick out who everybody is very easily. Just so much fun. Yep. Great book.
Totally fun book. So it was almost an easy pick, but there was definitely other stuff. We'll get to some of those in a little bit. Batman Inc. number 10 was out this week. And I'm trying to remember what I wanted to say about it, so take over at any point.
I didn't really enjoy it.
No.
I didn't really like it. I think it was probably my least favorite issue of the run so far.
Batman's making some interesting choices.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah, that's it.
after the death of Damian, right? He's making some, and this goes with Connor. You and I both read the Batman and the most recent Batman and Robin issue, where he goes to Frankenstein and is considering bringing Damian back from the dead. And then here, it's spoiler alert.
It's Frankenstein.
Frankenstein, yeah, sorry. And then going to take some man bat.
Not
serum.
Going to.
He does.
Well, it's the big cover reveal. It's the gatefold thing, but then it doesn't really happen until the very end of the issue.
He gets the exoskeleton from who's the exoskeleton from?
Lucius.
Then he gets Azrael's mystical suit, which keeps him from harm, and then he takes the man bat serum all to face off against Talia's evil clones of Damian. And I understand that there's a very dramatic element to that whole thing. I just found this issue not really compelling overall.
I like
there's a lot of fill-in art in this one.
I like the cojones of it.
Yeah, I do too. I appreciate that.
I like that it's like, you know, it has nothing to do with what else is going on. I don't care. And it's kind of like, wow, these are big choices, and they're not going to count eventually, but that doesn't matter. You know,
I think a lot of it was the 6 pages of fill-in art, which,
yeah,
you know, it hurts because Burnham's as much of a draw here as Morrison is, but
he certainly is.
Yeah, it's problematic. I don't know. It feels very servicey to me. I mean, as much as it's about Batman's struggles to deal with the loss of his son, I don't feel like I'm in his head all that much. It feels to me like that. This is why I tell people that I'm not such a big fan of The Dark Knight Returns. It's a very hyperbolic Batman to me, and that's not necessarily what I want out of my Batman story.
I feel like this is servicey to not the fans. I think this would actually not make fans. It's almost servicey to Grant Morrison's idea of what Batman could or
surfacey.
Could be.
I meant
surfacey. Okay, that makes sense. So what I was saying doesn't matter, but either way, but it does feel like it's Grant Morrison saying, these are the things that I like to do with Batman. This goes right back to when he was writing the, you know, eponymous Batman title. You know, it's just, he was just like all over the place, and it was very strange. And this is one version. It does make me wish that it'd be cool to me if the Damian story was in this only, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If this was the only, instead of everybody else trying to fit their things in and do their eulogies in five different books. You know, like, make this the story. And
But then again, I've enjoyed some of those moments in other books, mm-hmm. like the way that they cover not that Batman and Robin issue, but some of the other Batman and Robin issues and some of the other Batman issues. And, you know, so but I don't know. I don't think this is bad stuff. I just, it's not really what I'm looking for.
And I've been enjoying the storyline. I just, this particular issue, for whatever reason, I think it was just a lot that I didn't really care about. I'm looking forward to what happens next. I mean, we've got three more issues in the run ends, and I do want to see the confrontation. But this particular issue, I don't know why, but I just wasn't really into it at all.
And I don't want to be totally dismissive of this, because there are things I liked in here. Like I like the introduction to Azrael, because. Not being a huge follower of Azrael and what's going on in that corner of the Bat universe.
It's not the best time.
This section,
this is the new Azrael.
I was like, oh, is this, you know, a flashback? And then Batman walks into frame, and this is current.
Yeah.
And so I thought that would, and I liked the parallels between that and then Bruce putting on that armor. It just gets kind of batshit after that, which is fine, but I don't know.
All right. So, speaking of being dismissive, next up is Mark Miller and Frank Whiteley's Jupiter's Legacy #1, which, as you may know, sold a lot of copies.
Not on Comixology.
Not on Comixology, though, because that's not what they do.
Not an option.
What'd you guys think before I...
I quite liked it.
I wrote a review.
Yeah, I think... I know you two guys are sick of me talking about this book, but I'm done with it, so I won't talk about it anymore. But I just finished the Joseph Kennedy biography, and it felt very much like that in terms of the old original generation building up this thing that then becomes less and less as the younger generations go on. And what happens in this book is that a bunch of upper-class people who lost their money in the stock market crash of the 20s go to this mysterious island and gain superpowers. We flash forward to the present where they are old superheroes and they're kids and are basically reality stars with superpowers. And I quite liked it. It was a very restrained Miller.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
I didn't know what to expect going into this. You know, I was like, great.
I was worried.
I think there was a lot of people who were like, okay, great. You know, new Frank Whiteley art. And then, but also Miller, which is just a loaded kind of thing. And then, but going in as I really liked the intro. Cause that's just, I don't know. That's my kind of milieu. Yeah. The King
Kong
stuff.
It's very like pulpy adventure, like 1940s serial, 30s serial type.
And it was interesting because a lot of times if that's not your main setting, this is, you know, an ancillary thing that I don't know if they'll be going back to that, but I was impressed that it was so restrained and it wasn't just like making fun of that kind of storytelling, you know what I mean? Like I felt like he could easily have done something really over the top, and
that's what was missing from this that we've come to expect from. There was no bombast to that extent. There's no.
Do you feel like it wasn't there? But did you miss that or
no? No, I don't like it. I mean, I'm not a Mark Miller fan, so
It was absent, but not necessarily missing in that case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was missing from what we've come to expect from him.
Right. And so I was a little. I found it a little jarring. And you're supposed to feel, kind of jarring, going from 1932 to 2013. And for a little bit, I kind of resisted it, and I was like, I really wish this whole book was, the King Kong thing, but that's not the point. And then I gradually said, this is kind of interesting. I like what he's doing here. Again, we've seen a lot of stories about the Golden Age losing its luster, and
the modern reckless modern age superheroes, right. And the upstanding Superman-esque Golden Age heroes. But he's got to be doing more. You'd think,
yeah.
This is very much a setup of the world, the characters, the dynamics. Here's this family of superheroes, and the old guard is one way that the young kids do cocaine at clubs, and
right.
And they're more celebrities than superheroes because the old guard's too busy doing all the crime fighting. So,
I don't know who I like or root for yet, but he won me over with the supervillain fight and the idea that everyone's gathering together. It's sort of like when you're playing World of Warcraft and everyone's going to get together for raids or whatever.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with that.
I've never played it, so I'm deferring to you guys.
Yes, it's
but
raids.
Yeah, you get together and so this one superhero is like, oh, I missed it, so I'm just going to hang out here by the sidelines and see if they need me or whatever. And because there's so many superheroes in this world, and then the fight actually culminates inside the villain's head, and he's in a psychic painting.
Brilliant panel,
great panel.
Yeah.
It was really pretty. And then again, this was something. It's really interesting that you would think in a Miller book he would show all of the things he's describing, like ripping out the guy's spine or whatever, and all the horrible things they're doing to his body. But it's so much more powerful that he's telling the villain this. And
oh, it's downright creepy.
He can't do anything about it, right? It's chilling, and it's so you don't get the huge violence, but I think this is so much more powerful than that, especially in a shock value Miller book. So this is refreshing, I thought.
I was very pleasantly surprised by the
book. I'm interested in following through with the next issues.
I mean, my only thing about it was I was kind of bored. it was just like I get it, and there's lots of.
Do you think it's the fact that a character hasn't really emerged that you can
feel the need to explore the superhero archetype in this one slightly slicing the pie this one other really thin way again right now. I just feel like I've read stuff like this a lot.
Yeah, and I mean the metaphor is in there. This world is packed with superheroes, and that kind of mirrors that there. This market's packed with this kind
in
of
the,
story.
In the sort of 2000s. 2000 era, there was a lot of this, yeah. and Miller was involved with a lot of it, he's the guy who reinvented the that's not true, he's the guy who patterned the Ultimates after the Authority.
Right, so
it's good looking, it was fine. I'm not terribly interested, but I was surprised.
I think honestly it could go either way, but I guess me and Connor are more interested in.
I love the
intrigued in the
superhero.
Next.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite topics.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe so just this look at it wasn't all that different for me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
especially since he doesn't get a chance to do this. He doesn't get a chance to write those superheroes. This is him working out whatever he's got to work out.
Please, if he called up and said I wanted to do it,
I don't. But he doesn't want to. He didn't get the chance for a long time, and now he doesn't want to. And this is what he gets to do. Staying in the family of legacy books, which I believe this is the same universe, right?
It may as well be.
Okay. Star Wars Legacy 2. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
I thought it was much better looking than not the first issue was bad, but I thought they really stepped that up.
I think it was a stronger issue.
Yeah.
It's the same. In the first issue, sometimes got a lot of work to do, and now we get moving. I think we could spend a little time with these people and know. I'll tell you something. The little recap at the beginning, I was like, oh, that's what happened.
Because yeah.
I wasn't necessarily clear about that in the first one. But, we're in the world of Star Wars. There's Ithorians. It's not IG-88, but it's one of those guys. And we're going to spend a lot of time with an assassin droid. I'm totally cool with that.
When I saw that, I was like, yay.
And my only problem with this issue is the same one I had in the last issue, is that I'm not necessarily interested in Jaina Solo as I am in Han Solo. I'm
Anya
in Star
Solo?
However you want to call it, but, I like reading about Han and Luke and Leia, which is why I prefer the other book to this one. I'm never really been interested in the future of these characters without, you know, hundreds of years later.
Right.
I mean, I like reading it. It's really fun. This was really fun and action packed, and I really saw Hardman draws great aliens. You know, all the aliens in here looked wonderful, and the droids,
and the ships, and
yeah. But ultimately, I'd rather just this be Han and Leia as opposed to, you know, whoever they are.
Is it? Okay, so we're on the flip side on that, because I think for me, I'm sort of not souring necessarily. I'm still enjoying it, but I prefer this to the Wood book, because there's an uncanny valley thing with seeing Han Solo on the page, but it doesn't feel like Han Solo to me. Like, it doesn't, the dialogue doesn't, I don't know. And maybe it is true to, if you actually go and look at it one-to-one from the films to that, but it just, for some reason, it's just, I think there's more freedom here to do something. And I'm not coming to it with the baggage of, this is what Han should sound like, this is what Leia should sound like. Because these are original characters, but in a world that's really familiar and with a storytelling tone that is familiar and feels like Star Wars to me. And I really love Anya and her Mon Calamari friend, Sauk, I believe is his name. And that's just it's a really good dynamic. And then bringing in this AG assassin droid or bounty hunter droid is fantastic. I think they've got a really good team for this little quest that they're on, with great villains, and it's got all the Star Wars trappings there. So
I gotta tell you, I am going back and forth on both of your positions.
Mm.
Part of me is like, yeah, this is cool, and then part of me is like, I also like the other thing, and I'm like, I also don't like it when they do the other thing. I can't decide. I enjoy both books. I'm not going to rank them.
Yeah.
This one
I think it's subjective. I don't know. It's a thing of preference. And again, I like both of them too. I just I'd give this one the edge.
I just wish this creative team was doing the other book. Is what I wish. I mean, ultimately, that's that. Yeah. Then I'd be really happy.
Well, we can't always get what we want.
No.
Although
we got another fantastic issue of Fury Max.
Yeah, this one almost made me uncomfortable.
It made me uncomfortable. Let's not talk about the end first. Let's talk about the middle. Which I thought was one of the best scenes I've read in maybe years.
Give me nouns. I've heard you guys alluding to this and this being shocking and harrowing.
Well,
stuff.
No, this is what the shocking part. This isn't the shocking part. The best scene I thought in this book was the showdown between Pug and his wife.
Yeah. Okay.
Which has been coming for 11 issues. Basically, Pug is the repugnant.
For 40 years.
Yeah. He's the repugnant senator who's been pulling the strings behind everything that's been going on this whole time. And his wife is in love with Fury, and they've been having an affair for 40 years. And so it finally all comes to a head here. And just one of the most devastatingly withering conversations between two people who are married but don't love each other. One of them has much more power over the other one than the other does.
And just the dialogue is spot on. And it's a little melodramatic and fine. But the cartooning, his posture and his face and his demeanor just speak to, you know, like they made his paunch like sort of, he's just extra saggy. Do you feel like Parlov is getting even more... I'm losing my train of thought, the right word, but it's getting more expressive,
mm-hmm.
Less like even less sort of based on reality and letting the sort of cartooning sort of feel a little more naturalistic, I guess. It's like, if you look at his face, it's just long and droopy, and it bespeaks, you know, I don't care what happens to you.
And it's just, you've been waiting for this conversation for 11 issues, and it goes exactly the way it has to go. Where you think, you know, she's got the upper hand because she's been seeing someone behind his back, and you know, she's attractive and he's sort of ugly, and then, you know, she has all these superficial things over him. He just goes, "You do whatever the fuck you want. I don't really care what happens to you. And you can leave. You'll have no money. You'll have no power. You have nothing. Nothing." You know, it was just very devastating, which then sets you up for the other devastating part of this issue, which was Fury has been tracking. What's his name? The Barracuda.
Yeah, sure. It'll work.
Barracuda, and he find out what's going on because they're trafficking drugs through Nicaragua, and discovers that they've just massacred a village, and it's just brutal.
Yeah, it really is. And the thing is, like, this is fairly realistic with what happened. I mean, like, these are the kinds of things that happen, right down to the very specifics about them, and like his last page is really unsettling.
Yep.
Well done. You know, like, his response is correct. what he says at the very end. But it's almost like, wow, is this too real, like, for this comic? I guess not. But
I mean, it's just bad things have been happening all throughout the entire thing. Yeah. I think it's been a very real book throughout, as real as you can be with Nick Fury, the character who is in Punisher Max in Barracuda. So. Just another great issue. And I think we have one more left to wrap this up, and it's been wonderful.
Yeah.
Speaking of too real and real family fun, Appleseed Comic Con.
It's quite a change.
Coming on May 11th. Don't miss out on one of the Midwest's best comic book conventions, Appleseed. Hosted in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Appleseed features over 100 creators and is a show dedicated to comics and the comics community. Come hang out with creators like Mike Norton, Paul Hornschmeyer, Laura Innes, Ryan Brown, and many more. Just $10 gets you in the door, and buying your ticket in advance guarantees you an exclusive 11x17 print by artist Dave Wachter. Check the guest list announcements, purchase tickets, and more at appleseedcon.com.
We're fairly certain none of those people have ever massacred a Nicaraguan village.
I got to say, that convention will be almost nothing like what happened in Fury Max. I've really got to plan what book goes before those next time.
I was like, wait a minute.
Paul, that was as good a segue as anyone could expect. I got to give you that, but
am I the only one left reading All-Star Western?
You are.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I didn't leave because of, I just was like, I'm good. I'm all right.
Yeah. In this issue, there's a flash of light and Booster Gold appears. And I have to admit, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was funny. You know, there's this guy walking around in a superhero suit. So he decides to disguise himself by putting on a duster and a cowboy hat. But that's it. And then he ends up, through a convoluted series of events, becomes the sheriff of this town and has to team up with Jonah Hex. It's not a one and done. There's actually another issue, at least. But it was goofy enough. And I think that Palmiotti and Gray are in on the joke enough that... I actually quite enjoyed it.
It's like a Chevy Chase movie.
Kind of, yes.
It's Back to the Future 3.
He keeps trying to convince Jonah Hex that he's from the future, but Jonah Hex won't believe him, even though he's wearing what he's wearing. But I enjoyed that. I also really enjoyed The Flash 19. The Flash was art by Marcio Takara, who I thought he could totally draw this book if Matt and Paul can't keep up anymore. I really liked the art of this a lot. This might have been my favorite issue of the series, actually.
Yeah. Nice.
This is basically Die Hard. It was... Barry without his powers in a prison. There's a prison break and, you know, happening at the big supervillain prison, and he doesn't have his powers because they've been siphoned away by the Dial H character and over in his book. And so he basically he raids the armory, takes all the rogues' weapons and uses those against the people breaking in. And it was fun. It was one of those, you know, the hero still is a hero without his powers kind of stories. And, you know, a lot of sort of allusions to Die Hard in it, but I quite liked it.
Now the last issue, it was the last issue of Avengers Arena was my pick of the week also, right?
That was the arcade issue.
You're right. The last regular issue, the arcade origin story,
right?
This is sort of us back in the thing. I just, it's kind of more of the same in a really good way, but one thing that I thought was really interesting about this is that we focused on X-23 a lot. Now, I didn't have a lot of experience with her. I just heard people complain about her and her brother.
Just her existence, not her characterization.
Super interesting in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super interesting, really well done. Like, you know, it's kind of
the book is super interesting.
It is. It is just kind of, there are no bad characters. There are just bad writers.
Do you remember way back when, actually New York Comic Con again, when this book, right before this book came out, everybody we talked to at Marvel said this is the book to watch out for.
Yeah.
And we were all like, ha ha, right.
I believe them.
This was the book to watch out for. Mm-hmm. This is a really, really good book.
Yep. And then like that idea, was it a Brian K. Vaughan idea with the kid with the Sentinel? Wasn't that was like his concept like from years ago. And then like, so that kid is not getting any traction anywhere else. And then so in here, he has that really chilling kind of like monologue to, he's talking to X-23, right? And saying that all this terrible stuff has happened and I'm also paralyzed from the waist down. And then he runs amok with the crazy Sentinel that he's finally repaired. And now he's a major player in this game. And the X-23 thing, talking about, you know, when I walk into a room, I think about how to kill everyone in the room and all the different variables. And she doesn't want to, but that's just her training and her upbringing. And this is fantastic. I mean, it's great soap opera stuff, but really high action too.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Hopeless is writing at a level a lot higher than you would think based on his experience. So it's really fun. Speaking of high level, I know we kind of mentioned this last time, but we got BPRD Vampire number 2, which they've somehow, I guess they decided to just call it Vampire instead of 1949.
I think because those didn't sell too well.
I'm guessing.
Vampires are in, Josh.
Are they still? Like, I feel like they're.
It's sort of like
that.
A joke, but then like everybody stops later and like, wait a minute.
Yeah. It is about vampires, though. I can't, you know, most books are, really, at the end of the day.
I want someone to name a book about a vampire but have no vampires in it.
Anyway, this is Gabriel Bá and Fabio Moon. And the one thing I wanted to say about this was that there were some other books this week that I felt had some art issues that kind of were standing out to me. But this one, I was just like, it's so elegant the way that they draw pages. It's perfect. I mean, like, they... It's. I realize, and I know that they're on a Hellboy book, but I was like, these guys are the natural successors of Mike Mignola. Like, I don't know why it wasn't obvious to me before, but there's so many.
And you're not just talking about stylistic stuff; you're talking about layouts.
Yeah, all those things. I mean, the thing about when Mignola's drawing Hellboy, like, there's nothing there that doesn't need to be, and it just flows smooth. And this whole thing was like that. It's just elegant, and it's kind of a vampire story, but it's actually. Kind of quiet feeling and the, you know, the things that happen, the pages are just so nice, and it's one of those you want to tell somebody to look at storytelling. I was like, this is just perfect. Like, it was just so good.
When I think about Mignola and what's great about a Mignola page, just setting up that atmosphere of what that room is like, what's over in the corner, and like little incidental stuff,
and
he's almost
cutting
like
back to that main character for a second just as he looks at it.
Yeah, and he's almost like if it was poetry, he'd be doing list poems where you're listing just very, very specific things, but then it sums up, you know, they add up to something greater. And I think that's what Moon and Bá can do. And I loved the little villages, these like sort of Eastern European kind of locations, and cutting away to creepy looking characters. There's a guy who follows them for a little bit, and the way it's not easy doing a chase scene. You know, it's not easy doing a scene of pursuit because, and you talk about it in that like film studies, like when do you cut away to the person chasing or pursuing? When do you cut to a wider shot? And with this, you completely understand the rhythm of how fast they're moving, who's going after them, how close they are. And it's great. There's a lot of exposition in here too. And they even kind of make a joke about that, like enough stories, let's get moving. But it's all told really well.
Yeah, it really is. It's just I was just blown away by it, very much so. Anyway,
well, much like Flash and much like Star Wars Legacy, I thought Young Avengers 4 was the best issue so far of this series.
This was very nearly pick of the week.
Yeah. I believe it. I mean, I really like the first issue of Young Avengers, but this definitely the strongest since that. When you talk about crazy layouts, that spread was amazing with the key. And so basically you're seeing, it's almost like a Where's Waldo spread or something, but like, I don't know, or like a Chris Ware page, you know, like just how it's showing the different movements of Novar. And how that's told. I'm trying to think of things to compare it to, but I haven't really seen anything.
The text component of it, I thought, was really like the thing that put it over the top. It was drawn really well and everything, and I like the sort of simple nature of how that was done. But
you can goof that up really easily, but that you could track that perfectly.
Well, in the same way, the page a couple pages after that, you know, come with me if you want to be awesome. That could be a really dumb line.
But in this book, it works perfectly.
Exactly.
And also, my favorite bit of that wasn't just that page, but when you turn it, that page has now gone black and white inverse, kind of like, Josh, remember on MI5 or Spooks when at the end when it would go black and white inverse, the last shot? Kind of like that, you know, and then it goes to the title page. Like, it's just very inventive in the same way that Hawkeye is. It's not at that quite that level because of, I think, probably because of AHA, but, you know, they're just playing around with the form a lot. Yeah. Within this book, which is fun, which is good. Everyone should be playing around with the form.
I think this is, you know, this is guys at Marvel working with each other. And they had one of my favorite things in all comedy and forms is a cutaway to unrelated things of people not doing anything and not caring.
Oh,
Thor, with Captain America. Anything with that? Nah, no big deal.
With Captain America apparently wears a Captain America shirt all the time, even when he's not in costume.
The two silent panels out of the five. I love that. That is. I would do that all the time, given the choice. And then I really like the Miss America character. I like that it's a girl, you know, doing that instead of a guy. It is Miss America, right?
Yeah. Miss America Chavez.
She showed up in that Vengeance story that Joe Casey did, but I don't think that he used her as well.
Also, I mean, I didn't read Journey into Mystery, but Kid Loki's pretty awesome.
Yes.
He's a great character who really makes things interesting.
It was funny because I instantly was like, I see what they were talking about. And it made me want to go back and read that because you're absolutely right. Like,
It's a pure chaos element. You never know who to trust or why or if you should.
I like that bit. I can't tell if you're trying to trick me. I was trying to trick me. No, I wasn't. I'm joking. Anyway, I am.
Some like Game of Thrones like head games kind of stuff going on in here, like where he's trying to play everybody against each other. And
I was trying to trick you before, but now I'm not.
All right.
He's just a great character, and it's a really fun book. Yep. Ultimate Spider-Man 22.
I really like this book. I want to like it a lot, but I know that it's just the constant retreading of the tropes.
I just hate Venom, and whenever Venom showed up in the old book, I hated it too.
Yeah,
it sort of brings everything down.
I was like, you know what? I don't feel like you need to kill the mother. You already killed the uncle. You've already got that thing going. I guess this raises the stakes, but
it does raise the stakes in that he didn't really see it as it was still a game to him.
I guess.
Before this moment, he was still kind of doing it, you know, lightheartedly, and now things are serious as Venom kills Miles' mother.
Yeah.
But,
you know, this one raised a lot of questions for me. Like, you know, do you have to have a death of a family member for the Spider-Man, like, myth to work? And I was like, well, it's not like this is a completely other world where this is the only Spider-Man. There was Peter before this who lost his Uncle Ben. So it did happen. And then thinking about precedents made it really interesting that what this book, you know, as icky or murky as I feel about this particular choice, I think one of the really interesting things about this book is that you've still got the cast from Peter's story.
Right.
They're still alive and are living witnesses to that story. And it's not like they're alternate reality characters. They're very much a part of Miles' life. So to have characters like Gwen and MJ around, that's really... That adds this extra dimension to it. And what are they doing about this? Because he's much younger than they are.
It makes it heavier than I want it to be, I think. And
that's the primary motivation of most superheroes, though. I mean, that's really the thing.
That's not a reason to keep doing it. But, you know, at the same
time... Well, if you think about it, what is going to make you put on a suit and go fight crime? What's going to motivate you enough?
Your little fat Asian friend.
Well, the other interesting thing about this is that, you know, how many, it's 22 issues in, and, you know, Miles has been around for a while and has been acting heroically or in a costume for a while, but this is like that inciting incident that caused Pete to become Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He wasn't Spider-Man before that. So positioning it this late is kind of interesting and makes me wonder, is Miles' origin story done? Is it ongoing? And it looks like he's going to do the, you know, toss his costume in the trash can thing and walk away.
You got to that before. That was Amazing Spider-Man 50, so.
I think I feel the same way about this as I do as Batman Inc. this week, in that this particular issue didn't excite me, but overall I'm still really into the story and the characters. Yeah. I do want to see what happens next. I think Paul's right. There's a lot of interesting things that can happen next, but issue, I just don't.
I think about it, I'm like, oh, it's another book who's somebody really close to him died. I got to read that now. Like, it's just, I feel like we'll be doing that constantly.
Well, these people have dangerous lives.
I guess, but, you know, have fun with it. Have him hide from his parents for a little while longer. I feel there's a lot more to do there. It's like The Sopranos. They'd always kill somebody off before it got interesting because they didn't know what else to do.
Because that's life, Josh. People die unexpectedly.
Whatever. This isn't life. It's fiction.
Books this week we want to talk about. You can go to fanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books. You can even make your own pick of the week selection. And we like to run down the top five choices as made by the audience. And number five, Batman Incorporated, number 10, as we discussed earlier, 4.6% of the votes, and this is change at time of recording or really randomly at any time during the day, it might change. Number four was the Manhattan Project, number 11, 5.0%. Number three was Uncanny Avengers, number seven, the iFanboy Pick of the Week, was 8.4% of the votes. Number two was Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 22 with 12.5% of the votes, and number one, by an overwhelming margin was Young Avengers number 4 with 49.4% of the votes, and I think that's a fine choice.
Oh,
I think mine was Avengers 2, I believe.
Mine?
No, mine. I think I chose
Avengers. Wait, regular Avengers?
Yeah. You gotta be.
I told you I pulled the ripcord in that.
When that so one, which
I
one?
Avengers, I mean Uncanny Avengers.
We have to know that nomenclature?
What I'm saying is I'm not reading any of their Avengers books. Right now, this is my Avengers book, Uncanny Avengers. Okay. So when I say Avengers...
you're asking a lot of us to remember.
It'd make it easy if I put Avengers into every title.
Well, that's what Marvel's
Ultimate on. Comics Avengers Spider-Man. Would that make things easier on you?
I think I'm gonna be the people's champion. I'm going to say Young Avengers is my pick of the week.
The Manhattan Avengers?
It could have gone that way. I mean, it was an excellent issue also.
Embarrassment of riches.
Connor?
Let's do a couple user reviews. If you go to fanboy.com/comics, you can also write user reviews, and we'd like to put some good ones on the show. The first one is by user Vumbo, who reviewed East of West number 2, Jonathan Hickman's new series from Image, and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and 3.5% of the iFan base made East of West number 2 their pick of the week. And Vumbo says, after the first issue of this book, many questions were asked. I'm really not sure how many of these questions were answered by this issue, but I'm still loving it. I'm not normally a huge Hickman fan, and while I recognize he is a very methodical and deliberate with his scripts, sometimes he takes a while to get to the point. This series, however, reminds me of all the best parts of the shows like Lost. We're thrown into this world we don't quite understand that is familiar only because we're told so. We are constantly meeting characters that are much more aware of this world than we are readers. It works very well as a sort of opposite dramatic irony. If I had one complaint about the writing, it would be that the great evil stored in the body of a child trope has gotten really, really played out in the past few years, especially in comics. However, this is not my complaint with this comic, as even the four horse children of the apocalypse seem alive and vibrant as characters.
I need to read this one another two or three times to make sure I understand what's going on. I think there's a lot of characters and a lot of political intrigue going on, and I'm still wrapping my head around it. But I really liked the negotiation scene between Death and it's a closing scene between Death and Mark Twain, but not really, or Uncle Sam, whatever, you know.
Foghorn Leghorn,
Foghorn Leghorn, exactly.
Now, Death, sit here now.
If you put a gun to my head, I don't think I could tell you what this book's about.
Nope.
Accurately. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I do wonder if Hickman, who had gotten very sort of focused in his Fantastic Four run, has perhaps spun out too far again. You know, I think Avengers is one of the reasons why I dropped the Avengers books, and I had to switch to trades on Manhattan Projects, and I might have to switch to trades on this too. It's just that, you know, it's very esoteric at times, and you have to sort of, you know, it's may read better in chunks.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable, and I feel eager to go back and read the first one and then this one again, and like I want to crack it, but I feel like maybe I didn't devote as much attention and time as I would have liked, because I like a lot of the themes that he's playing with here. I like this world, so. All right, so let's talk about another book called Invincible number 102, reviewed by BLK Assassin 106. Give the story a 3 out of 5, art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week. Nope. This reminded me of The Walking Dead. I feel like I get to do that every episode. This reminded me of The Walking Dead comic pace-wise. There was a big fight scene in the beginning of this issue, but afterwards it was just a conversation between Mark and Eve. That's it. Wow, now that I'm typing it, dawned on me just how much nothing really happened besides the cliffhanger that Mark drops on us as readers. Ryan Ottley does a terrific job as always. That's that. Not a bad issue. It just ended really, really quickly, and we're taking baby steps forward.
I feel like a lot of the focus has come off of this book.
Well, it doesn't get talked about at all.
It doesn't get talked about at all. It's, you know, it's been around a long time. They were building up to their big issue, but they sort of filled things up on the way to it, and now the thing happened. The one thing that he's a little off about is that something did happen that was a really big deal, the dad, Omni-Man, I think, he's now the emperor of the Viltrumites. That was actually a really big thing that happened. But the thing is, like, the issue was just there to tell you that that happened. And most of the other stuff around it doesn't really matter. You just sort of, you do sit around. But, God, he nailed it. I think Kirkman definitely has a formula, and that's it. Big bombastic thing at the beginning, a bunch of stuff in the middle, and then a last page that gets you. What happens in the middle doesn't matter so much sometimes.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, I don't want to say this lost a step. I wish I was still as into it as I was.
I think it's similar. It's really similar in a way to Walking Dead in that it's really just kind of hanging out with the characters.
Yep.
You know, at this point, it's been going so long that it's really just kind of like, let's just hang out. Stuff may or may not happen.
The thing is, we got the feeling that something big was going to happen with Mark a long time ago. He was going to step away or what, and like it hasn't happened. We're just waiting for him to make this decision. It feels like, so you know, some guy that always complains about his job, and you're like, just quit already.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he needs to quit.
I don't know anybody like that.
No, I've never met anyone like that.
Nope. Everyone's really happy.
We should move along.
Yeah. So those are the user reviews. GoodIFanboy.com/comics. You can rate and review your books, and if you make your review good and you get it in early enough, we can read it on the show. And let's talk about Amazon real quick. If you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, you can help us out by making your purchases through that venue. It doesn't cost you any money. It only costs Amazon a little tiny percentage. And if you know whatever purchases you make in the 24-hour window after you go through that link, it goes right to the website and helps us out. Keeps the light on. Keeps everybody, you know, in the chips. And Ferraris, as we like to say around here. And
we do say that.
So,
which is ironic because we're really not. I mean, other than a couple of Ferraris.
How many Ferraris until you're in Ferraris? You know?
At least three.
Okay. Last time, Paul challenged you to buy all the George Foreman grills, and no one did. So no one wins the prize.
Yeah, we can see that you didn't.
Pretty weak.
So fanboy.com/Amazon, the best thing to do is just copy the link, make it your bookmark if you're an Amazon purchaser like we all have on our browsers, and you don't need to go through that website as you normally would. So we appreciate all the support, and thank you very much.
Buy a diamond. Buy a set of bleachers.
Somebody almost bought bleachers, but it wasn't free shipping.
Get serious about digital photography.
Time to get
on the high level.
Say that you're working on the 5D, but it's like it's the Mark One. Like, you need the Mark Three. That's gonna work with light a whole lot stronger. Your images are gonna show it.
Mm-hmm.
You want all those books?
Step up
to learn how.
Josh takes lots of glamour photos of his Ferraris.
Yeah, no, it's like a soft erotica,
right?
That I self shoot.
Sure.
So Joel writes.
Let's get some audience questions in before we run out of time and or dignity.
And this
Joel
is related.
Joel writes in, we talked about BPRD Vampire earlier, and he had a question on BPRD. I saw that Vampire Number 1 is a direct follow-up to 1948. Is there necessary information to the Vampire book in 1946 or 47 that I can start with 1948 or just keep going with Vampire? I've never read Hellboy or BPRD, and I was looking for a good jumping on point and a good story outside of my superhero Star Wars world. No. I often will say just jump in, but on this I don't recommend it.
There's some threads between the 46, 7th, and 8th series, like minis, but not necessarily the particular thread that's happening in Vampire. Like there's other characters. There's the woman who looks like a little girl. Uh-huh. Like that's one of the carryovers between
these
them. But
year ones. I think benefit from knowing the other stuff that not necessarily BPRD, but at least Hellboy. And
go back and get that first Plague of Frogs hardcover.
Yeah.
That big one. Those are really nice collections. And the BPRD stuff, the main series is really, really strong.
And those are a good deal for what you get.
If you want to just do the paperbacks, skip 1 and 2, and I think jump right to 3.
But could he just read the year stories, those three?
I wouldn't do it. I would recommend if you're gonna just jump on in the middle, just jump on in BPRD right now.
Mm.
And I like the main BPRD series more than these. I mean, I like these, but these are sort of like variations on a theme. Yeah. That stuff is where the real character stuff comes in, the real team stuff, and you know, I guess it sort of depends on what you like. But if you really want to get to know those characters, the main series, BPRD, really good. I mean, the first few trades, I think, are just like more anthologies. But then when you get like Arcudi actually becomes like the real co-writer, that's the stuff. That's what you want.
So don't start with those. There you go. Next up, John. Hey, someone else reading. I actually read the last one.
You guys pick a lot of first issues, which have an advantage illustrated by a Blue Velvet quote. I'm in the middle of a mystery, and it's all secret. Imagining potential excites the brain. Realizing that potential seems infinitely harder. So what are your favorite climaxes? My vote's Morrison's Animal Man.
So
realizing that potential. There's an accent on the bat. Realizing that potential seems infinitely harder. So what are your favorite climaxes?
So great sort of endings.
What are your great endings? Animal Man is a good ending.
Animal Man's a really wonderful sort of, I think there's three trades anyway, so they're really great for that.
Creature.
Creature is a great ending.
It's mentioned in on every show, but it isn't really great.
Man is a great ending.
Yes, it does.
Man is a wonderful ending. Starman, I think, is a wonderful ending, crescendo and ending as you sort of go through that whole thing. I mean, those are really my go-to ones.
Still chewing over the DMZ ending, which I finally read about 3 or 4 months ago.
I need to finish that.
X-Men the End, Men and X-Men, book one.
2 and 4.
Great ending.
It's hard in comics because it doesn't actually happen that often.
Yeah.
Actually, the one place that endings really seem to be great is almost consistently Vertigo, because they sort of come in there with the whole story. So
Scalped,
I can say Transmetropolitan. Lucifer is a book that I don't talk about very often, but as a sort of piece, even Sandman, to an extent. You know what's a great one? Sleeper. Sleeper, there's two volumes of it. Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, still my favorite thing that they've ever done together. And sort of just the first chunk of them has a really good sort of story, but if you read the two seasons together, they're really nice also. They stuck that ending real nicely. But Preacher.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, long-running series, the superheroes don't end, so it's hard to pick those, really. So
I want to say, Ed Brubaker's Captain America, and it may have ended nicely.
The last issue was really good, but the road to get there was rough.
Right, exactly. That just takes a long time.
I'm looking at my shelf of trades, and it's hard to pick out. We picked some good ones.
Gotham Central is the greatest series ever that was like
right.
I wonder how that series would do now. It's a different era than when it came out.
I don't think it would do.
But I think it would do better than it did. That's my contention.
How did the Alias end? Wasn't Bendis's like Daredevil arc in general pretty good?
Bendis's Daredevil run was really good. It ended well. Alias ended well. Garth Ennis's Punisher ended really well.
Oh yeah.
There's some good. They're out there. They're tougher to find.
Rucka's Punisher.
Rucka's Punisher ended well.
Yep. Fear Agent, I thought, did a really nice ending.
Lots of good. I mean, it's tough, but they're there. The gems are there.
Yeah. Vertigo's 52, really.
52 ended well.
If you like the big story, yeah, 52 was great. Who'd have thought?
So there you go. There's a bunch.
Yeah. Do we have time for one more?
Let's just squeeze one more in.
All right.
Okay.
Paul.
Sure. Eric from LA writes, I write about art, novels, memoirs, films for a website on war, which leads me to my two questions. One, do you know of, would you recommend any comic books, graphic novels about the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan? The only book I can think of is Pride of Baghdad, which I loved. And two, what war comics, graphic novels would you recommend about wars that aren't World War II? I just feel like everything tends to be about World War II.
War.
So anything about modern wars,
I had a hard time thinking of any. I was, the activity sort of dips a toe in it, but it's not fully there. What was the book, Paul? Was it Shooters by Eric Troutman?
Yeah.
That was modern day, right?
Check that. What was that called?
There was a book that from Avatar that I picked up in trade called 303 that Garth Ennis wrote. And Jason Burroughs drew, and it was about Afghanistan.
I gotta say
that's really good.
To me, and this is a preference. I don't tend to like stories from the modern wars. I don't know because I haven't sorted them out. I don't know.
It's easier to do it when you're looking back than
it's much easier to do it. I find it very conflicting. I don't really like reading those stories because it's still a thing that's going on seemingly forever.
It's a different. You have to be in a completely different mindset.
Yeah, and I don't. I don't like. There were like 3 or 4 years ago. There was a lot of movies.
Yeah.
About the and I don't enjoy them.
It was called Shooters, and that was very good. That was about a soldier who came home and conflicting things about orders he was given, and that's all about the modern war experience and Josh, family.
You would enjoy 3-3, Josh. It's Garth Ennis doing war stories, basically. So,
all right.
but in modern, but there's also the second question.
This one we can help you with.
There's the NAM.
Yep.
From Marvel, which there's, is Marvel's Vietnam comic.
In the same way, there's the classic Last Days in Vietnam by Eisner, which is more, it's almost like a series of cartoons, but still pretty poignant, very important to comics.
There was 300.
Yeah.
300.
There was,
it's a war.
It is a war.
Joe Kubert's story, Dong Zhuai, Vietnam.
That was a great one.
Yeah, that was sort of modern master doing.
Probably a lot of Vietnam ones.
If you want to go even further, Save Vario Garaged is a book by Joe Sacco. It was about Bosnia and Serbia, and that war. Really interesting look at a different place and a different time. The guy, he's basically a comic book journalist.
Yeah.
It's easy, but Garth Ennis has got a ton of the battlefield stories.
They're mostly World War II, but there's a couple. There's a Korea one, and there's...
But he's done other... Like, if you look up Garth Ennis war stories, like, he's done a lot.
There was a World War I story in one of those war stories collections. I mean, they're there. You know, it's mostly World War II, though, by far, because it's the most globally influential war.
And it's also the one where you can kind of easily go good guy, bad guy, and just be like, we're done with it.
Right.
Everything else gets a little more odd. The NAM, I know he said that earlier, but that really
Crazy, the Warren Ellis.
Oh, that was a good one. That was Creasy? A good one. Yeah. It was pick of the week.
What?
It was a one shot. It was a pick of the week at Comic-Con.
It was like a, but extra long.
Yeah, it was like a prestige.
Prestige,
like,
right.
Like single issue about the history of a certain kind of, it was like just 5 years ago.
Longer than
just
that.
Old. Anyway. You can write us at contact@ifanboy.com. Thank you for your questions, everyone. And, to get on the show, you can do it that way, or you can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. In both cases, tell us who you are and where you're from. Thank you.
There are other podcasts we have on the site, including the Make Comics podcast. Hey, one got up last week. I haven't been good with that. We talked about covers. I was like, we haven't talked about covers yet? We should do that. Really good one. Me and Andy Schmidt talk about what's going on in different aspects of making comics. He's a former editor, and now he teaches how to make comics with his company Comics Experience. So check that out when it's available.
Did you talk about whether or not it's smart to have the title on the cover?
We talked about, yes.
Because it's, these are questions I have.
You should put the title. I'll go ahead and give that away. It should
price?
It should look good also.
Price and number?
I don't believe we discussed number or price. I know. But why are there no Civil War comic books?
Good question. There should be.
There should be.
There you go, Josh. There's a hole in the market.
I got to post Civil War. Anyway.
Very lucrative market.
There's your problem. I can get those reenactors. I can do it.
There's also Booksplode. We did one on The Dark Knight Strikes Again. Very controversial. And
struck very strong chord in the community.
Yeah, everybody was. Yeah, lots of feedback, and I liked that conversation. Three to look forward to. Mind Management by Matt Kent. Gonna be talking about that soon. Green Arrow, The Longbow Hunters, Mike Grell. Gonna be talking about that. And then around the time, I don't know exactly what order these are gonna be in, but then around the time of Man of Steel, we're gonna take a look back at Mark Waid and Lynell Francis Hughes' Superman Birthright. So. Go to your local
library. We don't know when they're coming out, but we do know that Paul sent around an email to the staff with a long list of books.
I'm trying to figure out who's interested. Who wants to talk to me about this? And then, of course, we also have the Talksplode. We haven't forgotten about the Talksplode, and I'll be doing one of those soon with Glenn Weldon, author of Superman, the unauthorized biography. You may know Glenn Weldon. If you've ever read anything funny or insightful about comic books on NPR.org, Glenn is responsible for that. So we'll be talking about that soon.
Excellent.
All right, and check out ifanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book stuff and all the important news and discussion topics. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
You can go, you can email us, like we said earlier, contact@ifanboy.com, or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, to get your questions. You can hear your voice on the show. The kids seem to like that. If you call in, let us know who you are and where you're from. One of the questions from today, he wrote back and said, I forgot to tell you where I was from. So we made to tell you that Eric was from L.A. So
that's important. We like to know where everyone is.
It is interesting.
Now that the Frapper map is gone.
It's like a, damn it, you beat me to it.
Well, now that the Canadian, forget it. You know what?
Don't do it.
That got us in trouble last time. In the meantime, if you like the show, if you're from America or Canada or anywhere, anywhere outside of the North American continent.
They're still on the Frapper map.
You go to iTunes, leave us a review for this show, for any of the shows we've got, or any podcast you listen to. It really is helpful. And it helps give back to the show to let people know that you like it or what you think and help people find what they're looking for. So, you know, we appreciate it. You're our marketing team, American, Canadian, Mexican, no matter who you are.
Actually, we got a lot of apology emails from them. They were saying they were sorry. And we actually got,
they were saying they were sorry.
Box of moose they sent. So
they sent you a box of moose?
Yeah, I might put it up on eBay. We'll see.
Oh. Oh, so nice
I should
them.
Have said that publicly.
Queen and country.
Queen and country is. There you go.
There you go.
Well then, we're gonna go peter out now. My until was, next week. My name is Connor.
I'm Paul.
That was a wonderful Peter. I'm Josh. Overslept your first protest march. Chew up too late. Reach on.